Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
By the way, Pluto TV is the leading free streaming television service in the United States right now. Watch over 100 TV channels, thousands of movies on demand, all for free. No credit card needed, no sign up. Pluto TV is the easy and completely legal way to watch your favorite TV shows and your hit movies. So what are you waiting for? Never pay for TV again. Pluto TV is free on all of your favorite devices. Download Pluto TV today.
Your life, your country. You're listening to the Laura Ingraham Podcast.
All right, you're listening to the Laura Ingraham Podcast. Delighted you are with us. Big, big movement on a number of fronts. We'll get into all of it. I guess the world is not going to end because of tariffs. I love that. Oh, this is going to collapse. Oh, sky is falling. Sky is falling. Markets up again. And, of course, tariffs work. Always have been used by every president going back to George Washington. And in this case, it was the only way to get China to pay attention. And I don't think the president should be in any rush to have any deal with China. The more we can have things made in countries other than China, the better, in my view. And the more we can have them made in the United States, the better as well, especially heavy manufacturing. We need jobs. We need to keep wages high. And we don't need a glut of people in the United States. We like a tight labor market. That's much better for the American worker, which is what Trump's bread and butter is. And of course, everyone knows that I was at the border last week in Del Rio, Texas, and you saw the reports we did that were just shocking. I was just talking to my brother in California about it, and he said, Laura, I knew it was bad, but I didn't realize it was as bad as it was until you were down there, because of course he watched it, and I hadn't had a chance to catch up with him. And he said, this can't be the system we have. But joining us now, who's going to give us some sense about what the president has planned and is proposing for an overhaul of our legal immigration system, and then how we could deal with this asylum problem as well, as Mercedes Schlapp. Mercedes, of course, is a top White House advisor for strategic communications. He's an old friend as well. She joins us now. Mercedes, thanks for coming on. Let's talk about what the president intends to accomplish with this reorientation of our legal immigration system first.
Well, thank you, Laura, and it's great to be on. You know, the president, obviously, first and foremost, his commitment is to securing the border. We know that he has been focusing on ensuring that we prioritize and on border security first and foremost. And so what we've looked at, I know Senator Graham introduced a bill yesterday, in essence, in looking to close the legal loopholes. As we know, we say that in a way where it is making sure that our agents have the ability to detain and remove illegal aliens, which, as we know, they don't have that power right now. And then what this vision of the president and the legislative text that we're working on here at the White House includes, it actually goes even further, because it talks about real structural reform within the agency so that, for example, if someone is applying for asylum, you can distinguish between those that are fraudulent and those that are not fraudulent, that actually meet the credible fear criteria. Right now, the vast majority of these illegal aliens are basically saying two words, credible fear. And then they're thrown into this incredibly lengthy process where they could wait. They're released into our communities, and then they're expected to come back 2 or 3 years afterwards. I mean, it's a system that doesn't work. And so this would allow for expedite removal, where our Border Patrol agents could quickly process them, and then if they do have a true asylum case, then they can get processed. And if they don't, then they are removed from this country. And so that's a piece of this. It's strengthening the asylum laws. Second piece of this is the merit-based immigration system. This is that our system right now favors those individuals that have a family tie. So let's say we can bring in, there's a family here, they're immigrants, they can request and bring in the aunt, the uncle, the sister, regardless of skill. And we're saying no.
Scandal.
We're saying we will protect the immediate family, meaning spouses and children, And then, you know, make sure that they're taken care of first, because we have a tremendous backlog right now where, for example, there are spouses and children that are not reunited with their spouses here in the United States because of the fact of the tremendous burden on our current system. I mean, our current system has not been updated for over 60 years. And then the second piece of this is that let's not make this about family ties. Let's make this about employment and skills. If we're able to retain talent, if we're able to retain those, for example, students that go to these universities and really are, they get a letter of employment, and let's keep them here because they're going to bring in and contribute more to our economy that in the long run will keep America competitive globally.
Well, I'm going to make a devil's advocate argument here on the number of legal immigrants coming into the United States. See, business interests in the country, Mercedes, are never satisfied with the number of people here. They always want more workers because that drives down wages. And it's just the way it is. I mean, they want to increase their profit margins. I get it. But conservatives, in my view, should love a tight labor market. So the idea that, oh, we got to make sure these foreign students get to stay. I mean, don't we want to focus on educating American kids? And why would we necessarily want to create any system today that fast tracks talent that will replace American talent? I mean, we need American engineers, American software, well, American AI. I mean, why is it, oh, the Chinese, the Indians? I don't get that.
Right. Well, first and foremost, the way we've developed this plan is that it is focused on protecting the American worker. Right now, we have no control of the legal or illegal immigration system. Let's be real. It's Guatemala, it's Honduras, it's El Salvador. They're the ones who are more in control of our immigration system than we are of our own. And so, in essence, we're looking at ensuring first and foremost we're protecting the American worker, because so many illegal aliens are coming into our into the country, where basically the low-skilled workers are not only driving wages down, are making it more competitive for those most vulnerable, and those that are want to compete for those jobs can't compete because, again, the wages are so low. That's a problem. We've had an influx of low-skilled workers without the ability to control that. And so this at least puts it at a point where we know we have a number, a set number, the 1.1 million. It's not going to change. We're not increasing the number. And the key is to basically redefine how the green card visa system works. And, you know, we took the best practices of Canada, Australia, New Zealand. We wanted people who love America, who are patriotic, who can add to our economy and ensure that they understand that it comes with a letter of employment. It comes with the fact you have to be English proficient.
Mercedes.
What we're calling the Build America visas.
Yeah, well, I get that. But, like, to get an employee a letter from Google... Of course, Google loves having the foreign workers come in because they might be a little different because their wages are pretty good, but they love the fact that they can just write a letter and say, oh, see, this person has a job. Well, my question, why aren't we hiring American workers? Why don't we decrease legal immigration?
You know the reality of the market right now. There's more job openings right now than we have workers to fill them.
Well, I say that's good.
We also want to be able to retain the talent. We also want to be able to find those people that say, you know what, I love America, you know, and I want, like, Mike, I'm going to give you an example of my father. I mean, my father loves this country, and he's an immigrant. Loves it more than, and whenever you ask him, are you Cuban? Are you American? He goes, I am a proud American. And he worked as an accountant, and he worked as an electrician, and he provided for his family and was never on welfare and never took from the government.
No, well, your father grew up in a different era.
Those
that era is over.
The stories we need to capture, Laura, because there are those great individuals that can contribute to our economy and not take away from American jobs. And so the fact is we do have more job openings, and we want to attract the best and brightest to come to America in the legal way, as opposed to what we have right now, where we have other countries dictating who's coming into our country, because we have no way of stopping that flow right now until
I agree with
until
that.
The law changes.
Yeah, we have a low overall unemployment rate for native-born Americans, but we still have a low labor force participation rate, especially for those without a bachelor's degree in the United States. So that low labor participation rate is still very disturbing, right? It was 12.3%, I think, the gap labor participation back in 2007. And in the fourth quarter of 2000, the gap was 10.9 percentage points. Not to confuse everyone here, but basically the point is for non-college native-born Americans, we now have the labor participation rate at 2007 levels, which is not good. So I think the magic of Trump has been focusing on American workers and American ingenuity.
Yeah.
And I'm just always worried when it's like the business interests want more engineers. When I hear the business interests want more engineers from outside of the country, I hear the business interests want to keep wages down. And they're worried because wages are starting to go up, which is great for the American people. Great
it
for
is.
The birth
it
rate,
is.
Great for everything.
And you know, I know, you know, we stay focused tremendously on, and part of this is obviously working with, you know, Department of Education, et cetera, to find how do we get out of the one-size-fits-all and move towards vocational education? How can you get Pell Grants so then they can be used for students that don't want to go to college, but they want to do jobs that actually pay really well, and then they have the flexibility to be able to, you know, get it if they need assistance because they can't get it, they can't get their certificate without it, that we're able to help those individuals thrive. Mm-hmm. We know not everyone's going to be an engineer. We know not everyone's going to be a doctor or a lawyer or a TV host for that matter, or, but we know that, we can attract great talent and also ensure at the same time that our American workers have the greatest opportunity for upward mobility and the opportunity to get better jobs. And that is happening under the Trump economy. So I think you can balance both.
Yeah,
and I think that what the president's saying is the way the current legal immigration system works is so bad, so outdated, so benefiting people that have no skills. Do you know that one in four of these individuals who are coming with a green visa card, green card, they're over the age of 50. You know what that means?
They end up on
entitlement programs in less than, you know, in about 10 years. We want to, if we are going to use those green cards, we're going to have to reapply it so that it does allow for higher skilled workers to come in.
Mercedes,
and
I know
you're ensuring that we protect American
Mercedes,
workers.
I know you have to go, but just quickly, what are the political possibilities here? I mean, this is right before the 2020 election. As a lot of people are saying, you guys are just doing this to show that you like immigrants, or that's one thing I heard today. And the other thing was just to put the Democrats in a box because then they have to defend family chain migration, which is indefensible.
But
you guys really think this is going to get passed and leading up to the election?
You know the president well, and the president is willing to be a leader on this issue. He wants to. For him, immigration has been one of his top priorities, and quite frankly, it's going to be a question that we have to ask the Democrats. What are they going to propose? You know, they have nothing. They have proposed nothing except for open borders. They have been ones that have not wanted to deal with the border crisis. I mean, going down those reports it's horrific. It's horrific what our border agents are going through, and they have no power, and they are at a breaking point. And so the Democrats at some point they need to address the issue, or voters are going to hold them accountable for not doing anything to stop this crisis that we're seeing at the border. This president's willing to be forward-leaning. He wants to ensure that we have a plan in place that we know makes sense, and also unify the Republican Party again with a plan that we know what we're for. And that is that we are for competitiveness. We are for an updated legal immigration system. And we are for, most importantly, securing the border and stopping the continual influx of illegal aliens coming into our country.
Mercedes, thank you so much for joining us. I know you have a busy day over at the White House. Thanks so much for spending some time.
Thank you so much.
All right, Mercedes Schlapp here on the Laura Ingraham Podcast. We have a lot more to get to. Your calls, remember, if you want to be part of this podcast, just email us at ingraham.podcast@gmail.com. politics, the culture, more culture than politics. But in this case, we had to handle this issue today. Do you agree with this, that reorient legal immigration? A lot of people don't realize that we give 1.1 million green cards. That's permanent residency. You'll ultimately be able to apply for citizenship unless you commit a felony in the United States. And 66% of them right now are family-based migration, family-based green cards. That's nuts. That's always been nuts. And it's like second cousin twice removed, the uncles, the aunts, entire family trees coming into the United States. So they want to reorient that. I mean, if I had my druthers, I'd cut legal immigration by half. Probably by half. That's what I would do. I guess that's not going to happen, but that's what I would. I want to keep a tight labor market for all of your wages. And to me, that's the most important thing. Keep American workers making as much money as they can. And that's a vibrant economy and a higher birth rate, which we need because people feel more confident. So if you want to be part of the show, that's how you do it. You just email us your cell phone and your name, and we'll get you on and we'll have a lot of fun in the conversation. By the way, a lot of people are messaging me about skincare. You know, you see me on TV, you wonder what I use. Well, if you don't know me, if you don't spend time, in television world or where you have to be seen a lot in public, well, you know, skincare is so important. And for me, the Genucel line of products by my friends at Chamonix are fantastic. And I have great news for you. They've extended their Mother's Day sale, which I didn't think they were going to do, but apparently they're doing that for the jawline and neck treatment, which is so important, especially as you get older. Everybody wants to have good skin around your jawline and neck because that kind of shows your age. Robin from Lubbock, Texas loves the product. I love hearing from Robin. She said she put the jawline cream on her neck 2 or 3 days before she messaged us, and she said it's the best her skin has looked and felt for years. And people are telling her their face looks better, her skin looks more vibrant. She's blown away by the product. Well, join the club. So am I, and that's why I use my jawline product in the morning and jawline cream at night. And Chamonix has a great, great opportunity for you because this week only, you can get the jawline treatment free when you order the classic, which you have to have in your makeup bag or your suitcase when you travel, which is the Genucel for under eye bags and puffiness. And that's a nice little clean gel. You'll love it. Put it on in the morning, put it on at night, and you'll see the instant effects are awesome. So just go to Genucel.com. That's Genucel.com. Or you can text EYES1 to 77453. That's EYES1 to 77453. Surprise luxury gift. You get a second one free for a limited time. Again, EYES1. Text that. EYES1 to 77453. Let's go to Phil in California. His cabinet business has been affected by illegal immigration. Phil.
Hi, Laura. How are you?
Great. Thanks.
I love watching your show. I always watch you. I really enjoy it.
Thank you.
Okay. Hey, I got your message, so I called in. What's going on here is, I was born and raised in California. I've been here all my life, and I've worked for myself as a self-employed contractor since I was 16 years old.
Wow.
I hear that the economy is just cranking. I keep hearing that from all you guys, but I have never been so slow and had such a hard time as right now. I mean, I'm surrounded by shops that are ran by illegals, and they're not paying payroll tax. They're not paying workman's comp. They're not being regulated like I am. I mean, I have AQMD over here regulating my spray booth and counting every gallon that I spray. They're on me just constantly about everything, but these other shops, they won't touch them in this sanctuary city. They just won't touch these people. So we're not on a legal or let me say, a level playing field. So it's making it really tough to get jobs these days. And unfortunately, American people, including me, we want a good deal on everything. When we remodel our kitchen, when we want stuff, we want a good deal. So we look for the best price, and we have a lot of contractors out here that are just willing to use these illegal shops. They're willing to take the chance because they can make more money. But it's just a really tough situation here in California right now.
Well, I completely believe and understand that, and I'll tell you here's a situation which I came across the other day. Okay, So when you hire someone to do something in your house who's like a if you get a cleaning service or you get an individual housekeeper, okay, you have to pay payroll taxes on your individual housekeeper. That's the law, okay? You have to do that. You have to pay their payroll taxes. You have to pay, I think it's Medicare, all the stuff, unemployment insurance. You have to pay your part of it. Then they pay their own taxes when you give them the W-2 at the end of the year. Housekeepers who are just, you know, individuals, they're not independent contractors. Independent contractors are paid, and then they have to pay everything on their own. They have to pay their withholding, I mean, not their estimated taxes. They get a 1099 at the end of the year. Well, what I found out is that where I live in Virginia, all these people are hiring people just for cash. So they pay them. And so I asked this woman, so could you help us out in some things because we're having a party? And then you can help us out in the house and do some things. Well, I do it by the house. I said, okay, well, you know, we have to pay your payroll taxes and, you know, we have to make, you know, I don't do anything cash or this is all. Oh, well, we don't do that. I said, what? She said, oh, no, everyone pays us cash or they just write us a check. I said, well, you're not an independent contractor. You don't have your own a cleaning company. You don't have your, because if it's like a Merry Maids or something like that, that is an independent contractor. They bring their own equipment, their vacuum cleaners and stuff like that. Oh, no, that's not the way people do it. I said, well, people are violating the law. Now, why are they violating the law? Because they get away with it and because it's cheaper. Why do you think people you're doing your gutter cleaning? You notice everybody speaking Spanish. How many of those people are in the country legally? I have no idea to check. No way to check. But these are jobs that not only Americans did, but still try to do. And you hear the contractor Phil who just called in. Yet they can't compete because people are doing stuff on the down low, cheap, paying people cash, subs, getting paid cash, individual. It's a scandal. It's a complete scandal. But so what do? I have to pay people a lot more to make up for the fact that these people are paying cash and under the table. It's outrageous.
Yeah, I had the same kind of situation. I was working at a restaurant in Memphis, Tennessee, when I was in my early 20s. And my coworkers were illegal immigrants, and they just got paid cash under the table. So I'm paying taxes on my salary, and they're just getting cash.
No, they're getting cash. Good deal for them.
Yeah, it was great for them.
And the restaurant is violating the law.
And, of course, they always send the money back home.
They're sending their money back home. Oh, I'm sending my money back home. That shouldn't even be allowed. You shouldn't be able to send your money back home without a massive remittance tax. If you're in the country illegally, you shouldn't be able to send your money back home. If we changed all that stuff, well, guess what? That would change the illegal immigration makeup in and of itself if we actually did that. But it's a scandal. But people will just skirt the laws because they feel like they can. It's a scandal. Let's go to Mark Kerkorian, Executive Director at the Center for Immigration Studies. We just heard from Mercedes Schlapp on this reorienting the legal immigration, 1.1 million green cards. The 66% are now family-based green cards. They want to change it to 33% and flip up the number of skilled workers. You know, you hear from me, guys, you know, I want to reduce legal immigration and end illegal immigration. So I want like half the number of legal immigrants. Not that I have anything against. I love immigrants, but we got to get our system handled and process people out of the country before we can do much of anything else, in my view. And I want to keep a tight labor market. That's what I want. But not a lot of people agree with me. So I think a lot of people don't realize what's happening and why your wages stagnated for all these years. It's the politics is the art of the possible. What is possible? Right now, we have, after being at the border, we do have de facto amnesty. It's happening every single day at the border, and thousands of people are coming in every day. Mark joins us now. Hey, Mark, how are you today?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
So, Mark, you know, I hear from my friends at the White House that Mark Kerkorian's never going to be happy. Are you ever going to be happy?
Sure, I'm going to be happy. I'm not asking for the moon.
Yeah.
The proposal that they're going to be rolling out today isn't an actual bill. If this were the final bill and I were a congressman, I'd probably vote for it because there's a lot of really good stuff in it.
About the good stuff first. Well, like that, if this made its way into legislation. Tell us about the good stuff.
There's two parts to this proposal, and we haven't seen all the details yet. But you know, I know most of what's in there. Basically, is that it's enforcement and then also legal immigration. The enforcement stuff is actually addressing a lot of these loopholes that are incentivizing people to come across the border. It also includes, again, as I understand it, E-Verify for all new hires.
Yep.
That's all fantastic stuff, and it's great to see it. The legal immigration stuff that you were talking about, again, is shifting away from bringing people here just because they have relatives. So you'd still be able to bring husbands, wives, and little kids, but it's the other adult relatives that would be removed. What it does then is create this new merit-based system where we'd be picking people more based on their education and skills and what have you. And again, I think that's good. The problem is that it doesn't acknowledge that high levels of immigration, even legal immigration, are a problem for a modern society like ours. Even in a hot, even low unemployment, we've still got lots of people who aren't even in the labor market. And we have assimilation issues. We've got security and public benefits issues and high levels of immigration, even if they're going to be somewhat more skilled, are still a problem in all those respects. And the reason, see, I'm not asking for everything. I'm not saying unless this proposal cuts immigration by 50%, I'm going to reject it. No.
Right.
All I wanted was an acknowledgement that high levels of immigration can be a problem. So even a 5% cut in legal immigration would at least acknowledge that it's potentially a problem. Because like I said, this isn't the bill. This is more like a platform, a campaign statement. Mm-hmm. And a campaign statement should acknowledge the concerns of all the various constituencies that support the president. And the fact is, Harvard-Harris polling just last month, so this is not right-wing polling. This is not Breitbart saying this. This is Harvard School of Politics, I think, along with the Harris Polling Organization. They asked people, what do you think the president's number one priority should be? And among the president's voters, his own supporters, 1 out of 5 said finish the wall, and another 1 out of 5 said the number one priority should be reducing immigration into the United States. The fact that he's not at least making some kind of gesture toward that concern, even if it's a modest one, is the real problem here. Not that it doesn't include everything I want. I mean, I live in the real world. But a 5% cut in legal immigration is not some ridiculous request. But it's not in there. They have chosen to endorse immigration at 1.1 million people every year. And that's a problem.
Yeah, well, I think that level should – I mean, I prefer that it be cut by half, but I know that's not going to happen. But
yeah, it's not going to happen right away. How about just an acknowledgement that it's a problem?
Yeah, well, I'll cut it by 100,000. But, I mean, they'll say in response, well, that's just going to be a non-starter. But a lot of this is going to be a non-starter, so who cares? Yeah.
Right.
So, you know, why does that matter at all? I mean, and I think – another problem I really have is this H-1B visa program. I have a huge problem with this. I have dear friends who first alerted me to this many years ago, Mark, because they work in software, remote software management of healthcare systems. And my friend, I almost used her name, which I shouldn't, but she's my dear high school friend. But she said, Laura, I do have to train my Indian replacements. And most of them they're cutthroat. The people that she's had to deal with are vicious, and they literally laugh at American workers that they're replacing. They laugh at them.
And they're not necessarily all that skilled, quite honestly.
No, and Luann has to go in and help. She has to go in and like fix all their mistakes too.
Yeah, now there's no question that some people let in either on H-1Bs now or on this new merit-based system really are top-notch people. There's no question that some of them are. But a lot of them aren't. That's not what this selects for. And I'm afraid that even this merit-based system, especially if they leave the numbers very high, are just going to take in a lot of people like today's H-1Bs, except give them green cards. And that's not necessarily, you know, helping our economy or helping our society. It's one thing to say we want to make sure that Einsteins who want to move to the U.S. are able to do that. I want Einsteins to be able to move here. But they already can under our current system. And humanity doesn't create that many Einsteins every year. The fact is that this proposal and the current system of H-1Bs that it, in a sense kind of is supposed to supplement, they let in lots of people who are Einsteins, but lots more people who are kind of average regular workers and or maybe even below average based on American skills. And that's not really helping us or, I mean, it's not helping the United States.
And still, that story that only 2 in 15 Americans are even aware of the illegal immigration problem.
Well,
that's disturbing. I mean, we don't, because the media is an unholy alliance between the open borders business people, the NGOs, and the media, that the only reporting they do on the border is Trump's a bad person. That's the only reporting they do, for the most part.
Although I got to say, it's little by little, some Democrats, usually those out of office, are starting to realize people are going to start noticing what's going on at the border. And they're actually kind of worried that 2 out of 15 people who know that it's a problem on the border is going to start growing right before the election next year, and that the Democrats are rightly going to be blamed for a lot of it. And so there does seem to be some acknowledgement that the border disaster is something Democrats have to address somehow. But the elected officials on the Democratic side still don't want to talk about it. They're sort of covering their hands with their ears and saying, la, 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 I'm not going to listen to the bad orange man. And if they keep that up, they may actually be paying a real price next November for contributing to the border disaster that we're seeing unfolding right now.
And meanwhile, this is what the Democrats want. This is Beto on The View.
First of all, we're not going to put kids in cages. We're not going to deport their moms. We'll honor our asylum laws, and then we'll rewrite our immigration laws in our own image. Free a million dreamers from any future fear of deportation by making them U.S. citizens in this, their true home country. Lift the visa cap so more people can reunite with family, work jobs that we cannot find employees for here in this country. And make sure that our laws match our values and the reality on the ground here in New York and back home in El Paso.
Well, there's so much in that that's wrong, but your reaction to old Beto.
Yeah, I mean, let me just touch on one thing he said. You know, we're not going to deport their moms or kids, you know, that sort of thing. What he's saying is that he endorses and wants to continue the current situation where if you bring a kid with you illegally, you are released into the U.S. And if you lose your asylum case, as most Central America, almost all Central Americans do, because they don't really have a basis for asylum, if you lose, you just get to stay anyway, because ICE has enough trouble finding the criminals they want to deport, let alone just an ordinary schmo who has been turned down for asylum. So what Beto is saying, and this really is basically the Democratic position now, is that we'll have some show enforcement for show, like theater at the border. But if you make it past that enforcement theater on the border, you're basically home free and we're not ever going to look for you again. That is open borders in a real sense.
Right. It's de facto
and
amnesty. So he's for that.
I just wish they'd come out and acknowledge it.
So are they also pushing in this, because I haven't a chance to read the entire platform, whatever you want to call it, increasing the H-1B visa program? Didn't they already push for an increase of the so-called STEM workers?
This proposal apparently was originally going to address a lot of these guest worker programs, and they were going to try to rationalize it and make it less ridiculous than it is now. But apparently they couldn't agree. And so this proposal doesn't address, as I understand it, it doesn't address any of the guest worker issues, not the H-1B or the H-2B, which is the low-skill workers, or any of that stuff. So apparently there's no guest worker stuff in this bill at all, as far as I've been told.
All right.
Which
means
they're going to keep the H-1B system going and increase the so-called merit immigration, which is just seems to me is just going to
lower wages.
The problem.
Well, and I'm just going to go back to this. Conservatives should be for a tight labor market. That's good. That means American workers' wages will be more solid and have a chance of going up. And that's why one of the many reasons why wages are going up, because we have a tight labor market. They hate a tight labor market. They want to have a glut of workers so everything can look like, you know, the Washington, D.C., disgusting sprawl and everything down Route 29 to Charlottesville. You know, people are like, what happened to all those farms? I said, well, immigration, illegal immigration, glut of workers, glut of government growth, and it's all a big mess. So we have to ask ourselves, what kind of country do we want to live in? And then fashion our policies around that country. Do we want a country where middle class people make more money? Or do we want a country where business can just have a glut of workers and then manipulate them and abuse them and keep the wages low? So to me, that's the kind of analysis we should do here.
Yeah, I mean, and to sort of draw out that idea, government policy is going to have one or the other effect. It's either going to make it easier for employers to find workers, which means that the workers have to hustle to find a job,
right,
or it's going to make employers have to hustle to find workers. I want that second option. I want businesses to have to hustle to find people to hire, as opposed to regular
right.
people having to hustle just to be able to find a job.
Yeah, we just had a cabinet maker contractor in California who said he's been doing this since he was 16. And everyone says the economy is so great. And he said, but guess what? I actually pay my payroll taxes. I do it. These other companies, just they pay cash under the table. My business has been eviscerated because of this glut of people doing stuff, you know, illegally. And then the California doesn't do anything about them. And meanwhile, he's slaving over every regulation. So it creates very, well, I think a negative, perverse circumstances in which to operate in it. And it's not good for the American worker. So I'm going to say this till I'm blue in the face.
This is why enforcement is actually good for legitimate businesses, because it creates a level playing field so that legit businesses don't have this disadvantage where crooked businesses are able to undercut them. This is good for legitimate American businesses because they all have to work on the same rules.
Yeah, and I wish, you know, and for everyone who says, oh, it's not fair, my business can't survive if we have all these rules about immigrants. Good. Well, we didn't want the mafia to survive either. They broke people's legs in order to get their payments. So if you don't like that kind of illegality, why do we support the illegality of these under the table employees? So if you can't make money in this economy in a legitimate way, then you should not be in business. That's what I will say to anyone pushing more foreign workers or illegal immigration. Mark, thank you for what you do. We really appreciate your analysis. We'll see you on TV soon for sure.
Thank you, Laura.
All right. Mark McCorian here on the Laura Ingraham Show. Everyone knows how much I love my dogs. I was just walking my dogs. By the way, they almost pulled my arms out of my socket because they see a rabbit, and Jimmy is like a – he's probably mostly Staffordshire Terrier. Well, it's a little pit bull, but he's really, really cute. But he's strong. So he says a rat, pulls my arm out of the socket. And it's just, you know, but I love them. I mean, I just love my dogs. They're part of our family, and I love them. Well, all animals deserve to be treated well. They deserve to be cared for, especially those who are abandoned. Abandoned in the streets, abandoned in the wilderness. And if you don't know about Delta Rescue, what an amazing organization. It's the largest no-kill, care-for-life animal sanctuary of its kind in the world. So their super sanctuary is home to more than 1,500 animals, and they've all been abandoned. So you can help keep this beautiful mountaintop ranch to continue its mission of compassion by including Delta Rescue in your estate plans. 100% of your donations go directly to the animals of the Delta Rescue Super Sanctuary. Look, you can't take it with you, so why not give these animals a beautiful, long-lasting life, and they'll benefit from your generosity. For information on Delta Rescue's tax-saving estate planning options, visit deltarescue.org/Laura. Visit deltarescue.org/Laura. Learn more about the great benefits of your estate bequest. Donate today at deltarescue.org/Laura.
I'm a New Yorker. I've known Trump's a bully for a long time. This is not news to me or anyone else here. And I know how to take him on.
When Donald Trump started separating families,
our message to the federal government is simple. Stop this broken, inhumane policy right now. We sent lawyers to the border to help protect those families. When he told us he was going to cut off our security funding, we took him to court and we beat him. Don't back down in the face of a bully. Confront him. Take him on.
Well, Bill de Blasio is never going to be president of the United States. He's the mayor of New York, one of the worst mayors New York has ever had. He presides over sanctuary policies that value illegal immigrants over American citizens. His argument is Trump's a bad guy. He's lacking in compassion. He doesn't care about people. Kids in cages, kids in cages, kids. That's their whole thing. That's all he has. He wants more illegal immigrants because he thinks they'll get amnesty and then New York will show the rest of the world that we can place regular Americans, native-born Americans, with a whole new population and then do what? I don't know, create a socialist utopia? I have no idea. But I do not enjoy going to New York anymore. I used to have an apartment there. It's high taxes, high regulations, filthy dirty, under the leadership of Bill de Blasio. So it's a place for Chinese and Russians and multi-billionaires to buy stuff. And Trump loves New York still, but I just don't like New York anymore under de Blasio. But contrast what his portrayal of Trump is in his campaign rollout. Of course, the fact that he's running for president is hilarious. With what Trump's supporters were saying yesterday during Police Week in Washington, where victims of crime, victims of illegal immigrant crime spoke, and police officers also spoke, and the president just loves the law enforcement community and stands up for victims of crime.
It's something I didn't get to do at the office. I actually want to thank you personally, for you're the only one that actually reached out and said, gave your condolence to the family. And it actually means a lot to all of our law enforcement families that are here for the sacrifice my husband and his brothers in blue and sisters in blue have given. So I want to thank you for that. And we all, every family sitting out here, wants justice for what happened to their loved ones. And that's what I want for my husband.
Well, President Trump was speaking at the annual National Peace Officers Memorial Service on Capitol Hill, and he invited the family of Corporal Runeel Singh to say a few words. And remember, we brought you this story on radio and television. He was killed in the line of duty by an illegal immigrant in December of 2018, and it was just a heartbreak. A complete heartbreak. But there's so many stories like this. And before Trump, these were, you know, these were invisible Americans.
I'd like to thank every single law enforcement officer over here. What do you guys go through? I heard stories from my brother. This man over here, the Singh family supports him. Whatever he's doing for the law enforcement, we support him. His team at the White House has reached out to us multiple times. I don't think that has ever happened before, ever. This man is amazing, and my family supports him. Thank you.
This got no coverage in the, no coverage in the nightly news on any major news outlets. Again, they're invisible to the media. These victims are invisible. Coming up, my colleague at Fox News, her new book, Finding the Bright Side, What You Don't Know About Shannon Bream That Will Surprise You. She joins us now. Well, one of my favorite people at Fox, and there I have a lot of favorite people, but at where I work, because I work at a great place. But there are certain people who are, well, they tend to be more negative, okay? And we all can get in that rut. I can get in that rut. And part of it is the sarcasm, because I'm a little sarcastic, which is, you got to drop that every now and then. But then there are certain dispositions that are almost perpetually sunny, and you want to bottle that, and you want to drink a lot of it, okay? Because it's hard sometimes in the world that we live in, and especially in the media. It's rough and tumble, very competitive. But Shannon Bream is one of those people. You all know the Fox News at Night team at 11 o'clock. She follows the Ingram angle and has been just a wonderful addition to the Fox network, but a wonderful colleague at the network. She has a new book out. It's called Finding the Bright Side, The Art of Chasing What Matters. Shannon Bream, her book is just out. She's on her big book tour, and we're just so happy to have her on the Laura Ingram podcast. Shannon, congratulations, my friend.
Thank you so much. It is an honor to be with you.
And your book is on our Facebook page and on lauraingram.com, and everybody run, because if you want a read about Well, so Shannon's life, she's led a very interesting life. Her school, her family, her faith, which is a really big part of this book, how she got where she is. And Shannon, if you would start at your faith, because for me, without your faith in this book, it just jumps off the page. Your life would not have been what it is today.
100%. I mean, you know, we work in a crazy business. We work in a crazy city. And you really need something to keep you grounded and something to remind you you have so much to be thankful for. And we all hit bad places in life. We've all been through tragedy and terrifying news from the doctor or losing our job or losing someone we love. Those moments are just real for all of us. And I don't know where I would go without my faith. I mean, I spend time every day praying and trying to study the Bible and just find my roots there, because the world is nuts. And it's really been the one thing that's gotten me through the really scariest moments of my life, and I couldn't be more grateful for it.
No, I know you went to Liberty, and I've managed to spend a lot of time at Liberty University. I know, it's changed a lot. Wow. I'm like, this is unbelievable. This is a great, great campus and great people. You must be doing a big book event there. I'm sure you are. Or do you already do it?
The publisher let us roll out our book early there.
Okay.
So that we could go during commencement weekend, and it was so much fun. You know, my husband and I met there, and we joke about when we were there, it was like you were doing classes in a tent.
Right.
And it was all red clay, and you walked uphill both ways. I mean, now they have state-of-the-art everything.
Crazy.
It's beautiful. It's a great campus, great kids who come through there, and really the faculty and staff and professors. I mean, that's, you know, one of the primary reasons I went there, because they don't just treat you like a student and give you a good education. I mean, they actually care about you as a human being. And that's, you know, I talk about that a lot in the book. It's woven through there in my years at Liberty, because they were so formative, and it was just such a nice way to go to college and have some sanity around you.
Let's jump to law school, because in your chapter, Life is Too Short to Ignore Brownies Forever. I'm like, wait a second, does Shannon do pot brownies? Like, what's this all about? Of course you did not. But you, we talked about Miss USA, and I want to get into that as well. But you talked it dovetails into the big controversy now with the Alabama abortion ban. But you talked about the moment in class when you debated Roe versus Wade. Tell us about that, because I think that helped get you to where you are as well, those types of moments.
It was one of those constitutional law classes, you know, you take, and it's a giant first-year class, and everybody's in there. And I knew we were going to talk about it that day, and I thought, well, this will be interesting, because I had been in a religious education setting, K through 12, and then at Liberty, where we were really encouraged to debate things, you know, all kinds of ideas and controversies, and Liberty really encouraged that. So I was like, well, this will be interesting. It'll be great. And when the debate started, I listened, waited, and there was no one arguing anything but pro-choice. And I thought, well, that's just not even an interesting debate wherever you're coming from. I'm not sure if these people have ever heard somebody who would articulate a different argument. And I thought, just for the sake of having this legal conversation, you at least want to probe these ideas and see whether there's a counter to them, whether there's another side to this. And I just finally raised my hand and stood up and said, well, you know, a lot of people think this about abortion, or think this is, you know, where Roe, the reasoning could be questioned, or, you know, just to have a conversation about it. I literally was the only person in the class who even brought up the fact that there might be a different viewpoint or a different legal argument. And afterwards, there was a guy who left a note in my box, my mailbox there. He's a judge now, by the way, in Florida. And he said, you know, I'm Catholic. My faith is, you know, I'm very pro-life and that kind of thing. I'm so sorry that I didn't stand up and at least engage in this conversation with you, because there is more of a conversation to have. It shouldn't just be one-sided. And it was just an eye-opening experience to realize that, honestly, truly, many of my classmates had never heard a counter-argument. It was interesting.
No, they just hang around with each other and they never... You know, they think that nobody else, there's no one in the world who disagrees with them, because a lot of folks are extremely sheltered, and they pretend to be really sophisticated elites, but when you peel it all back, you find out they're the most sheltered people ever.
Yeah, because I literally had people look at me sort of wide-eyed, like, oh, I didn't realize that some people out there may feel this way about it, or that there is a different legal argument. I mean, they really sort of, their mouths were just hanging open, looking at me, and I thought, guys, we're supposed to debate these things from all sides. You know, you do moot court, they make you argue both sides of every single argument. And I just thought, how do you get through law school without having that kind of conversation about Roe v. Wade?
Now, when you were in law school and you talked about Sheldon, your husband, but you he proposed to you in an interesting place. Tell us about that.
I'm a chocoholic.
I know.
You know, hence the
I know. Brownies. I've heard in the bureau. I hide my chocolate from you.
I've got a serious sweet tooth, although I like the dark stuff. I think the milk
me
chocolate
too.
Is for amateurs, but that's just me.
Me too.
Yes, I'm a chocoholic, and my husband grew up in Pennsylvania. We were there visiting his family over Christmas, and we planned to go to Hershey Park. Because, I mean, that's like heaven on earth for me. They actually pipe out the smell of chocolate there.
I know, isn't it fun? Oh, my God, it's such a fun
fantastic.
Place. My kids
so
love
we
it.
Get
yeah.
there. I don't know that he's going to do this proposal, that he's got a ring in his pocket. And we're standing there in line to go on the carousel. And we see these people go around in the carousel, and we see the guy get down on one knee. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, that guy is proposing on the carousel. Like, how sweet is that? This is so cute. Mm-hmm. They come back around. She still has her gloves on, and they're now sitting next to each other. And she said no in front of all these people. And I'm like, wow, that did not go well. Well, my husband's plan was to propose on the carousel. And he's like, abort mission, abort, abort. Like, immediately, this is not going to work out well. So we go through the night, and he keeps handing me these little Hershey Kisses out of his pocket. And then finally, we're sitting down to have some hot chocolate, and he gets down on one knee, and he brings out this Hershey Kiss and hands it to me, and it's very misshapen and weird, and it turns out my ring was in there. And he gets down on one knee and says, will you be my wife? This is the last Hershey Kiss I have for the night, and it's the most important one. And it's very sweet, literally and figuratively.
Oh, my God. I was reading this going, okay, seeing the flop on the other side, you're like, okay, change of plans immediately.
Exactly.
Oh, that's hilarious. All right, the other thing I have to ask you about, I know this sounds like this is real, I'm in the, well, not frivolous, but this is kind of the girl part of the book for me. So you're in Miss USA, the Miss USA pageant, and it's in Texas, right? You're so hungry. South
so
Padre, Texas.
For like 2 years.
Yeah. So South Padre, Texas, the island, that's where it is. And a lot of gals always like to ask about the swimsuit competition. And I didn't realize until I read your book that you don't get to choose your wardrobe, including the swimsuit. And they handed you two, you wrote right in the book, they handed you two tiny pieces of red cloth. And you're like, that's not my size. What happened there?
Oh, yeah. At least back then, that's the way they did it, last century when I was in Miss USA. Yeah, you go in for your little wardrobe fitting, and they're like, oh, Miss Florida, here's yours. And they literally handed me these two scraps of red material, which I still have. I kept them in case they're in my presidential museum one day, mm-hmm. library. Uh-huh. And I looked at it, and I was like, well, is this one piece? Is this both pieces? I'm going to need to go up a couple sizes. And they're like, nope. That's based on your measurements. That's what you get. Next, Miss Georgia, you're next. It's sort of like there's no negotiating over this thing. And I literally, my first thought, I remember thinking, my pastor's going to die when he sees this. Like,
yeah.
I think he's not watching Miss USA. That was my first thought. But listen, I had been starving for a couple of years, so I wasn't too worried about hiding anything. I just, there was nothing left to hide at that point, but I just was terrified. And the great thing was my pastor was actually on a plane during Miss USA. So I feel good that he probably never saw the red bikini.
Oh, my God. The idea of walking out on a stage in a bikini. And I just could, even when I was like in tip top shape, I couldn't imagine doing
you
that.
You can do it now.
No way. No way, girlfriend. Now you could. Not yours truly. I mean, I'm pretty strong, but no thanks. And then
you do Orange Theory.
I do. I love Orange Theory.
Well, that's tough stuff.
I do it a lot. It's like 55 minutes. I'm in and out, and I didn't do it this morning, but I do it a lot. I do it like four or five times
Which
a week.
Which you look like you did.
Well, thank you. So you then, you go through all this stuff. You go to law school, and you're so well-educated. And then the news business. Just give us, for all the young people listening, and we have a young audience, how do you go from that to the news? All these girls come up to say, I want to be in the news business. Mm-hmm. Well, you don't kind of like graduate and most people go in the news business. So how did you get there?
Yeah, it was weird. I mean, I had gone to law school. I did practice for a little while. Mm-hmm. Never loved it. And
I was really
a news junkie, current events junkie. And I thought, this is so much more exciting. That's what I want to do. So I, at one point, after a year of serious contemplation and prayer and everything else, I said, I'm going to try to make the transition. So I went to the local stations there in Tampa where I was practicing law. And they all said, you can't come here unless you're a college student because we can't have you here unless you're doing it for internship credit. I beg a number of schools there, no, 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 you have to come back and go to Gen Ed and go through the whole school process. I don't have time for that. I finally wear down this one guy at the University of South Florida in Tampa. He's so great. He says, all right, I'm going to make you take a remote work news writing class. You can learn that, but we'll do the credits for you. So I was grandma intern. I was 29 years old. I was practicing law during the day, and I would go nights and weekends and hide it from my firm and go work at the station. And I finally, a couple months into it, went to my boss there and said, I'm going to quit my law firm because I'm going to get into news. And he's like, no one's offered you a job, which I thought was a technicality at that point. Then within a few weeks, another job opened up. It was 2 a.m. to 11 a.m., and I made coffee, and I wrote scripts for the morning anchors. Every time someone quit, I got their job. I started running prompter with no training, which you know is like the most important job in any news program is a prompter.
Yeah.
That was a disaster. And then a producer quit. I started producing. Then they finally one day said to me, if everyone has broken legs and a story comes out and they can't get there, you will be our bottom of the barrel, but you can go. So once in a while, I would get to go out on a story, and I was so excited. My boss leaves the station. The new guy comes in, and within 2 weeks, he says to me, calls me in, you're the worst person I've ever seen on TV. I don't know what that last guy was thinking. They should have never done that. You will never make it in this business, and I hope you're a better lawyer than you are a reporter, so basically get out. It was horrible. I cried. I was so embarrassed, and I thought, what have I done blowing up my legal career coming here and doing this, and now I've destroyed my whole professional life? And it took months and months and months before anyone would either interview me, give me, you know, 2 minutes of their time to make my pitch. It was a long, dry season. But you know what? It kept me humble, and it taught me this business is very, very just subjective and transient, and you can't hold on to it too tightly. It's just nuts.
No, well, that and it tells you that you really you can't listen to what other people's say and do as far as your own limitations. I mean, if someone's trying to limit who you are or what you are, don't let them do it. It's hard because everyone was looking for affirmation, but you can't let other people limit you. And I think in your book that really comes through, Shannon. Limitations are in your mind, and if you don't let your mind get filled with them, guess what? The sky's really the limit. And I love this book, I just love having you as a colleague. We're really blessed to have you. Well, just to have you on television every night. You do more of a straight news show than I do, but you do great interviews, and you've dealt with a lot of heartache in your life, including your husband's brain tumor, which was also incredibly compelling. And maybe you can end on that, because we have a lot of people listening who are going through their own health challenges, and how you were able to, you know, help him and hold it all together.
Yeah. Well, thank you first for your kind words. It is an honor to work alongside you and have back-to-back shows and next door offices.
Yay.
As well. You can
Yay.
Always come down for chocolate.
Exactly.
You know, it's always there.
Don't worry.
But yeah, I mean, I think that was part of the book and being really vulnerable and transparent. It's a little uncomfortable to put your stuff out there, but in sharing my husband's story, because it was such a dark, tough place for a couple of years, I just want other people, because I know we're all going to go through stuff like that, to feel mm-hmm. like, you know what, I'm not alone. People go through tragedy. You can come out the other side. There is hope. There's purpose for me in the pain of those kinds of situations. I believe that because of my faith. And that there are people who love you and will help pull you through. And if you hit a tough spot, it's okay to ask for help, to be vulnerable, hopefully I hope for people that they can rely on their faith or something else that's a really strong anchor for them. And I'm just really blessed. It made me appreciate him more, going through that and having him survive and feeling like, you know what, we can fight about stupid little things like how you fold the laundry or anything else, but he made it through this brain tumor and we're together. And I couldn't feel more blessed by that. It really just puts your life in perspective. But I just hope people will be encouraged.
No, it is. Thank you. Just thank you for that. I mean, as someone who went through cancer, you have to get empowered by the fact that other people who go through incredibly difficult challenges, you do come out on the other side. And just don't ever give up hope. Finding the Bright Side, The Art of Chasing What Matters. Pick up this book. I know you all love Shannon Bream anyway, but you're going to love her more after reading this book. And it's great for Mother's Day. We're continuing our Mother's Day book promotion, but also for Father's Day. It's a great, great summer read. Shannon, come back soon. Congratulations on the book, and we'll see you at the Bureau.
Thank you so much, Laura. I appreciate it.
All right. God bless. You're listening to the Laura Ingraham Podcast, and I want to thank all of our great sponsors. Who are making this show possible to you free every week, Genucel, Pluto TV, and Delta Animal Rescue, just among a few, and we love them. And make sure to patronize our great businesses that support this podcast. Without them, we would not be here. And I want to remind you all that we have a new podcast next week. Tell your friends, subscribe. And also remember that we are here for you, for America, now and forever on the Laura Ingraham Podcast.